Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear. Oh.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us on another episode of Dr. Homebrew. And we have a good show for you. We have the same style of beer, which is one of my... It used to be one of my favorite styles. I used to suck this down like I was milking the teat of life. Something like that. You know. It's nut brown ale. And God, man, Sam Smith's was just... That was like, you go there, you splurge a little bit at the BevMo... anyway, so we have a homebrew version of that. And then, of course, we also have a commercial Sam Smith's Nut Brown Ale, which I'm very, very excited about. Such a good style, such a good brewery. God, I wish I lived closer. I want to go there one day. You know, and they, if you had this beer before from Sam Smith's and you're like, it's skunky or whatever, the clear bottles, they went brown bottles years ago. So they're safer now. Go get it. Treat yourself. It's good stuff. But we're going to be talking nut brown ale here on the show today.
That's right.
And I'm excited. It's going to be a little commercial calibration first, which we usually do the homebrew first, but we're going to go ahead. We're going to set the bar really high for our guests. That's what it is.
You know, I always loved the Sam Smith's nut brown.
Yeah.
But the Teddy Porter was always my jam.
Yeah, dude.
That stuff was amazing. It is amazing.
Yeah, that stuff is good. For me, I mean, nut brown is great, but... it was the oatmeal stout.
Can we talk codes, you guys?
Sure.
I did a little research on it. So apparently, you know, the date code on mine is it's SH24U1. So
where do you find that, by the way?
Well, I looked it up and I found on a homebrew chat.
No, I mean on the bottle, but I got it. It's on the neck.
It's printed right on the neck under the gold foil.
Yeah.
So the S, I think, is just for Samuel Smith's. And then the H is the eighth letter of the alphabet, which equates to the eighth month of the year. So it's in August 24th. And U is the 21st letter in the alphabet. So it's August 24th, 2021 that I've got here.
Okay.
I believe.
I think I have... Cat, go away, dude. You're fucking retarded. I think I have SLA3U1 is what I think I have. I mean, it's kind of like rubbed off a little bit.
Yeah.
Can't really see that. Oh, maybe you can actually.
Maybe I'm wrong then. Yeah, I don't know.
See, now I kind of want to go get another bottle just to see if it's rubbed off too. But so the one at the end is the year. So this would be 2021.
Because L would be the 12th month and the U would be 2021. Yeah. So December. Yours is... 4 months fresher than mine in theory.
Yeah. Yeah, right. But it's still 10 months old.
Yeah.
That's very scary for a style like this, man. I don't know.
No, mine is sitting out in my kitchen, which I could run up and get, but it's not that exciting enough to do.
Yeah.
It's exciting to me.
There is something exciting that I found on the Sam Smith's website. So you go to like their Sam Smith's brewery, and there's the usual stuff on the top about bottles, draft, recipes, pubs. Then there's a link called Run a Pub. And I'm going to watch JP get really excited here.
Okay.
So you click on that, and it says, run a Sam Smith's pub. We're looking for couples to manage our pubs, preferably local to the pub. In every case, a good manager's flat is provided rent-free with no utility costs. We prefer to recruit couples who haven't run a pub before and are from the communities near to where our pubs are situated. And I'm thinking right off the bat, this is ideal for, you know, you and Taryn, right?
Well,
you can just start.
Yeah, but we don't live local to a pub.
Well, that's the thing, is you have to we're between Edinburgh to Cardiff and Carlisle to London. So sadly, Brentwood is not going to be the place they're going to be excited about doing that.
No, they don't but charge, it sounds cool.
But, you know, they don't charge for training. All the managers are salaried. You have both of you have to work full time in the pub and have no other job.
Easy.
But, oh, damn it, here's the thing. We don't have music TVs or fruit machines in our pubs. We don't allow swearing. Damn it.
You don't
have negligible trouble.
Yeah.
JP might have a little trouble with that last part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I can't watch soccer and you can't play the slot machine. That's fine. Who cares? But yeah, that's wild, man.
That's the cursing cool is what I was more talking
about. Oh, no, I know. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Well, for the soccer, too. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we get into the beer, though, I do want to remind you guys to go to 5starchemicals.com. And, send them an email, actually, if you want, and thank them for sponsoring the show. But the best way to thank them is to start buying their products if you haven't already, or if you are, to keep doing that. Keep using the products in your brewery. You got the Star Sand. You got the Sand Clean if you want. You got the PBW. You got a whole bunch of cool stuff over there to clean and sanitize your home brewing equipment. And go to the website while you're there, learning a little bit about what they do and maybe get some tips and tricks on how to, better apply these cleaning products to your homebrew cleaning regimen. Sign up for their 5-star homebrew club program. They sometimes have you test out products from 5-star before they're even on the market. Free monthly educational sessions, and then a bunch of other cool stuff. So check it out. 5-star homebrew club program over at 5starchemicals.com.
You can go to the website and email them and all that, but just go buy their products in your local homebrew shop and insist on their products there. Self-reputable, self-respecting homebrew shops would already have that. But it's good products. And
yeah,
you can clean a lot more than just your brewing equipment with them.
All right, let's dive into this beer. I just had a sip. And honestly, it doesn't taste like an 11-month-old beer. Actually, it kind of does a little bit. I don't know. I love it still. I'm still drinking it. Let's run through it. Who wants to go? Cooper, you usually lead us through these.
Well, I was expecting a little more. I'm like, oh, yeah, this travels so far, and it's been in the bottle. Mine has been in the bottle, if the date codes are correct or if I'm interpreting them right, a lot longer than a year. So I'm surprised there's not a lot of oxygen character in this. It's really not like cardboardy. You can tell that some of the flavors have surely dulled down over the course of that, the 14 months that this has been in here. So, but it does have a pleasant malt aroma, little chocolatiness in the background. Not super toffee like, but definitely some nuttiness, and a little caramel underneath. But it's I do get that characteristic kind of earthy hop that's coming alongside it and balancing out the malts, which is nice. A little floral or earthy hop is welcome in the beer. But it's not strictly necessary, but I think to balance the malt a little bit, you want to have something there hop wise. It's a nice clear beer. It's despite being, so we're looking at category 13B in the guidelines, despite it being named a British brown ale, it can vary from dark amber to a dark reddish brown color. So there's a lot of range for this. This is more on the, the reddish side. It's a reddish amber, I guess you could say reddish dark amber. It's not really brown, despite the name being brown on the label and everything. It's, almost a misnomer for the style, because if you're a hard-nosed judge and say, well, this isn't a brown, read the guidelines. It's got a lot of more range allowed for the style. So this is perfectly fine. The appearance is perfect. Nice and clear, a little low light tan head that's sticking around and clinging to the edges of the glass. Very nice. Flavor-wise, it's got a pretty smooth malt quality to it. And it's not cloyingly sweet here at all. It's fairly dry, but the malt sweetness is not like really bold or biting or sharp or roasty. It's got this nice, kind of caramelly with a little chocolate in the background, and I have a semi-dry finish to it where it's kind of malty, but there's a fair enough amount of complexity there that it keeps it interesting, but it's not, like some American beers, just let's go to town with this and put more of the chocolate, more of the hops, and more of everything else, and woohoo. It's got a little bit of hop to it, but not much. There's not a lot of bitterness from hop. I would say more of the bitterness is probably coming from the malts, but even that is low.
Could the age or treatment of the beer, because these probably aren't refrigerated on the way over.
No.
And then they come into port on the East Coast and then come all the way across the country. Could it be heat damage that it has a little bitterness to it?
I don't know that's going to bring up bitterness. It could be that some of the, as the malt flavors age out, you get a little bit more of that being noticeable. But you know, it's again, it's I didn't think that it was bitterness. It was heavy on the bitterness. It's there's a nice little edge of bitterness there, but and with a little bit of hop, little English hop character in there, lightly earthy. That's there balancing the malt. It doesn't really have to have any hop flavor, but it says a little bit. It can have a little edge of fruitiness to it as well. It can have a little bit of you know, kind of dark malt ester or darker fruit esters. Even a little raisininess wouldn't hurt, you know. This has a little bit of fruitiness to it.
Yeah, the dark fruit, like a dark, lighter plum, kind of dark cherry, just a little bit,
or maybe a little fig like, or kind of almost sweet tobacco, or so. You know, that's not a fruit,
but yeah, my favorite fruit is sweet tobacco.
Yeah,
I don't know if you knew that or not.
Yeah. Kids love that.
Yeah, they really do.
Good for you.
Yeah,
tobacco.
Yeah, and this is a kind of a middle of the road strength wise beer. It's going to be 4 to 5.2. This one in particular is 5.0% alcohol on the back of the label. So it's right down the middle into a 4.2 to 5.4. So they can be actually pretty light. 4.2 is a real session strength.
There's a quote from Michael Jackson on the back that just says he, and I don't know. No, it says Samuel Smith has the richest, maltiest, and nuttiest of the brown ales.
Yes.
And I would, you know, tend to agree, but also how many other beer writers do you know that are quoted on bottles of beer that are widely distributed like around the world? Like that's pretty neat, man. Look at that head. I mean, it's just head for days.
Yep.
You can tell this beer isn't married, right, guys? I'm just kidding.
I would talking about Michael Jackson to people who aren't beer people, and they think about like, why did the King of Pop write about beer? He never did that.
Well, yeah, you're fooling me.
He was all about the propofol. That was supposed to be funny.
Well,
Michael Jackson, we miss you.
We both went.
You both made a noise. It was a dad joke. It worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you know, when you get a brown ale, if you're expecting something like a porter, it's not going to be there. This is much softer and smoother and gentler than an English porter, or especially an American or robust porter. It's, you know, it's stronger than the London brown ale is a little different animal, but it's, you know, it's a little stronger than that. That's usually a little more sessiony, but
It is sort of reminiscent kind of a Newcastle brown ale, which maybe that's why I like Newcastle so much. So sort of like cut my teeth on brown ales on this.
The way that Newcastle used to be.
Bro, don't even get me started. Lagunitas fucked that brand up so much, dude. Yeah. I hate that beer.
Yeah.
It's so bad. It's terrible.
But you know what? I was never a huge fan of the Nuki. This is, I think, always had a little more flavor. It was a little smoother. There was always something a little objectionable about Newcastle Brown to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was the clear bottles.
The clear bottles. It was always
pretty much,
light struck.
Every once in a while, I could find it in cans.
Yep. And when you found it in cans,
absolutely fucking fantastic. Night and day. So and
that's
good.
Yeah, that's the same style. It's another 13B, as is the Witchwood Hobgoblin, if you can find a can of that or a bottle of that somewhere. Another good example of the style. But yeah, I'm enjoying this one, even though it is older. If you handed it to me and said, you know, how old do you think this beer is? I doubt that I'd guess 14 months. And it was warm on a shelf when I bought it, which is interesting. So
same, dude.
Same. It says a lot for their packaging. Once you get down to the, you know, the extremely technical, you know, side of getting your oxygen down to the tiniest fraction of, you know, how many parts per billion, it'll preserve a lot longer, even if it's not abused, but somewhat stored less than ideally.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little more forgiving when you have that low of oxygen in there. So. Brown ale's been around and in Great Britain for a long time. You know, the modern brown ale is a 20th century creation as a bottled product. It's not the same as the historical versions of brown ale. So if you read about brown ale from, you know, the 19th century or before, it's, they're talking about the different beer. But, you know, most of the beers we're tasting are in the guidelines or have come around, you know, the last 50 years or less, it seems like, maybe a little longer. Obviously some of them, some of the German styles and stuff, but, you know, styles morph as commercial tastes, you know, evolve and demand evolves. Just look what's happened in our careers as judges, you know, to beer styles. Some of the American beer styles, it's like tasting an IPA from the 90s versus a, you know, considered IPA now, or a pale ale, like we've talked about.
Yeah.
So,
well, just pale ale, that was the good times.
Yeah.
You know, now it's, you know, just close to a session IPA, and, you know, what are you going to do? Shar, you've been quiet, unusually quiet. What's going on? What do you think about this beer? You think Brian's Cooper is taking us through the right way? You agree with these styles? Why am I yelling at you? I'm shouting.
I think he's doing it the right way.
All right,
good. I want to back up just a little bit, and I'm going to read to us from the website just a couple of things about this beer. The Sam Smith's Nut Brown Ale is brewed with well water, the original well at the old brewery, sunk in 1758. So this is it's a well that's 250 is older than the United States. Still in use. I know, it's amazing. The hard well water being drawn from 85 feet underground. Made with the best barley malt, of course, yeast aromatic hops fermented in stone Yorkshire squares.
Yeah.
To create a relatively dry ale with rich nutty color and a palate of beech nuts, almonds, and walnuts. I can't say I've had a beech nut. I've had walnuts. I'm not getting walnut in this at all. Are you guys getting walnut?
You know what? No, I'm not. I'm on their website and they have an alcohol-free Sam's Brown. And I just, like, I'm looking at all of these Sam Smith beers that we can't get over here and I'm pissed. Sorry.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess in a little bit, walnut has like that weird mouthfeel that I'm not getting.
Yeah, I'm not really. Okay. I don't like walnuts either.
Yeah, I'm not really, I'm not an expert on walnuts.
No. But what's also interesting to me, I look at the ingredients. Water, malted barley, of course, yeast, hops, carbon dioxide, and cane sugar.
Interesting.
So there is cane sugar in this beer. I find that really fascinating.
I wonder why.
Well, probably maybe, to lighten the body a little bit and to get it to dry out a little better. They want a drier beer with that malt that's there. Mm.
You know, I wonder if it has to do with the Yorkshire squares too, because as I recall, and maybe it's... The Yorkshire squares, that was like a big thing like 20, 25 years ago. People were, oh, we got to ferment traditional like the British. And the Yorkshire squares were kind of a Solera type system where they were constantly pumping fresh wort in to like these big square stone fermenters and pumping beer out. And I think there was like a diacetyl. Yeah, you get diacetyl tends to be okay in some of the British styles. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting any diacetyl on this at all.
No.
And maybe that has to do with, I don't know, it's kind of fascinating to me about some of these process items. I should have done a little more research on the Yorkshire squares first.
It's all right, man.
But this is just a really classic style. It's a really clean beer. I do get nut character in the aroma. I don't get the walnut. That's okay. But there is some nutty, malty stuff in there. And like we were saying, I mean, this stuff used to come in the clear bottles. And it was always notoriously, well, even then, it was not as cardboardy as some examples of things you could find. You put this in a brown bottle, and man, it'll survive. Yeah, I'm impressed at how good this is, getting it off a warm shelf at BevMo, probably a year after it was made.
Yeah, it's not terrible. Moving to the brown glass has definitely improved the viability of their beers. And honestly, you know what? The ciders that they make are very good too.
Yeah. No, I'm sure, I haven't had one. I'm sure they are. So here's something fascinating too. I was looking while I kind of got distracted while Cooper was talking with Google Street View and Tadcaster. So I'm looking, I'm kind of driving down the high street here in Tadcaster, and there's a this building that's called the Old Brewery. It's a Sam Smith's, the Old Brewery. It's beautiful. It's a classic old British building. It looks like an apartment house or something until you go around the corner and realize it just goes back a ways and there's a brewery. And then down the street, you see this sign for something called John Smith Brewed Here. And it's another brewery that's owned by Heineken. where they made Newcastle Brown. Apparently, I went down this rabbit hole a little bit. Again, well, I shouldn't be going down these rabbit holes while we're doing the show.
Yeah.
But there's Heineken owns it now. And apparently for a few years, they made Newcastle Brown at this John Smith brewery, literally down the block from Samuel Smith.
Maybe they were the same beer. Yeah. Who can we talk about this to?
I know.
Ron Pattinson, maybe? He may know.
Yeah. I suspect that way back in the day, I mean, I guess there are a billion Smiths, but I also got to think this must have been, this might have been like a family thing where there was a family feud, you know, fucking 200 years ago, and John went over here and Sam went over there and they each made their own beer.
Yeah. Well, that's how we got Puma out of Adidas.
Really? Is that a thing?
Yeah. Puma was a split from the Adidas shop, I think is what it was.
Yeah, I would recommend this. I mean, to our listeners, this is a lot of times I don't recommend going to a BevMo or Total Wine or any of those, buying a warm bottle off the shelf from a different country and expecting to have anything but a horrible experience for whatever, how many dollars you spent for that. This was not terribly expensive. I got the larger bottle. It was probably what, like $7 or something. I mean, it's
minus $4.99. So yeah, not bad.
It was in that ballpark. I mean, it probably was closer to $5. It's not like the cheapest thing, but it's not super expensive either. Their packaging is phenomenal. I mean, this should be a cardboardy mess. And the fact there's still a lot of goodness left in here is really amazing.
That's right.
You can get it in cans as well. I guess they have a canned version of it available. Oh, so God. I don't know if that's here or there, but actually it looks like, Total Wine has it for pickup. I don't know. But yeah, you can buy it in cans as well.
That would be amazing.
I agree.
Have we judged this? Have we scored it?
I am pleasantly surprised by this beer. I honestly was not excited about having this beer. Unlike JP, I didn't have a good impression of Sam Smith's because most of the beer I had was in the clear bottles from the past that sat on a shelf for many, many, many months and was abused and, you know, just treated poorly and heated up too much and had that weird cardboardy and just the malt just went sideways. This one has a little bit of the essence of the beer left. And if I see it, knowing the date codes, if I see a fresher version of it, like JP's is less than a year old, that's, you know, 8 months or whatever, or 10 months, it's a little bit better. Might be worth picking one of these up for a beer share once in a while and just like, hey,
do it.
Yeah.
Everybody do it.
I'd give this a solid 40.
There you go. Score 40. Yeah. What are you giving a coupe?
38.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
I can tell mine is older. Mine might be a little older than you guys is too, but
yeah, it's a little old. It, you know, maybe gets a little metallic in the nose a little bit now.
It like warms
up, but I think it's still good. And this is the thing we sort of talked about a little bit on the show from time to time. And this is a perfect encapsulation of it where you can still have these little flaws and these little ticky tacky one or two things like, it's not perfect. It has sharp edges or it has this or metallic or whatever, but it's still a very enjoyable, very drinkable beer. And I think when we have like the very good section of the score sheets, which is what, like 33 to 38 or whatever the fuck it is, I forget now, you get low mid 30s. It's still technically very good. That's what this is. Still very good beer. And I still have three more from the four pack and I will drink them even though it's not fully treated well. There's problems with it. It's still very good. Mm-hmm. It's still a very good beer. So
it's really amazing.
Yeah.
True.
One day I will drink this from the source. I promise.
Yeah. That would be a much better experience, I think.
Oh my God. I can't wait.
The richness of malt is somewhat lacking. I think that the brightness of a little bit of the, you know, it's not going to be necessarily sweeter, but I think it's going to taste sweeter with those fresh malt characters there. The nuttiness is going to pop a little better.
Yeah.
And it's just going to have a little more essence of that fresh malt in there from the brewery. So,
yeah,
but still not bad for how long it's been out.
Excellent. All right, everybody, hang on real fast. It's Dr. Homebrew. We're going to be right back with our homebrewed beer, which is also a nut brown ale. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, back to the examination.
All right, what's up, everybody? Thanks for hanging on. We have Sean on the line here with us. Sean, welcome back to the show, dude.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. You brewed a nut brown ale. Is this something you've done before?
Yeah, yes, it is.
Okay, is it a style you enjoy, or?
Yes, actually.
There we go. It's hard to get, man. It's still one of those styles that's just hard to find. So if you want a good version of it, you got to brew it yourself. You know, it's not like pale ales or IPAs or God, even like fucking lagers and pilsners and stuff. You can, those have had a resurgence, and I'm waiting for the nut brown ale to sort of have its time again, but I don't think it ever will. It's too old school, you know? It's too old school for, I think, a lot of people to care about. I think it's the word nut in the nut brown ale throws people off. They don't know what to think of it.
Yeah, it is a kind of a hard thing to find, like to hit.
It's like, what is that? Like, to explain it, you're like, what is a nut brown? I don't want nuts. What are you talking about, man? Wouldn't want that. Okay.
The peanut butter stouts have been popular lately.
Yeah, it's a whole nother thing.
Nutty beer.
Yeah. Brian Schar. Why don't you start us off here with Sean's nut brown ale, please?
Well, I certainly will. So, Sean, thanks for sharing your beer. Are you in a homebrew club?
Yes, I am.
Yes.
Mad Zymergist.
Boo.
Oh.
I don't know.
Just because I started the club, guys.
No, Mad Z's are awesome. Kind of the cousin of, in a way, like the good friends of my club, Words of Wisdom, and I guess one of the many awesome clubs we have here in the Bay Area.
Yeah. I, when I first, started brewing here, I wanted to join the Bay Area Mashers because I entered the World Cup of Beer. I started to meet some of the guys in that club. At the time, Lee Shepard was the president, and mm-hmm. I asked him, like, how I get involved with your club? And he's like, the dues are $20 or whatever. This is like 1987 or something. Yeah, no, it was not that long ago, but I was like, I'd have to drive, 40 minutes to get there. Like, okay, that. I saw the things they did together, and I didn't really go to a club meeting of theirs, although I felt like, I have to pay the dues before I can even go. And I wasn't sure that, being a guest was okay. I always make it clear in our club too, and nothing against Lee. I'm sure, if I would have asked, can you have guests, he'd say, yeah, come on out. But we always make sure that guests know they're welcome to attend a meeting or two and hang out. So yeah, thanks for being in the Mad Z's, and it's fun to have some new blood in there.
There you go.
Yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun so far.
Yeah. All right, Char, let's do it.
All right. So I like this beer a lot. I enjoyed this aroma. Got low caramel, low toffee, no hop aroma, which is okay for style. No esters. That was pleasant and inviting. I did wonder if the toffee that I was getting was maybe diacetyl, but A, I don't think so. And B, even if it is, in the British styles, a very low amount is usually okay. And I think it's hard sometimes to even pick out. The style guidelines talk about toffee and butterscotch. I mean, geez, if you're not going to talk, if you're talking about butterscotch, you can't complain about diacetyl. I don't get the mouth slickness, but it's just one of those things that I got, and it was enjoyable in this style. And I didn't knock it at all for what maybe diacetyl, but maybe not. 8 out of 12 for aroma. Appearance, 3 out of 3. I'm holding the glass up to the camera. The huge light tan head is gone, but it was persistent for a while. This beer is crystal clear, copper color. Again, 3 out of 3. Flavor, Begins with a moderate amount of malt, bitterness coming up to balance and mid palate, low caramel, low toffee, no hop flavor. Again, that's okay. The toffee flavor gets, actually I made a note, as it warms up, the toffee probably comes up to about a medium level for me. It's well attenuated. The finish is long and balanced, maybe slightly toward bitterness. I looked up the style guidelines, and up to 30 IBU is okay for the style. And 30 IBU is quite a bit in like a lower gravity beer, I think. So that it can be a sort of a robust, firm bitterness. And I definitely got that here. 14 out of 20 for flavor. Mouthfeel, 5 out of 5. Medium low body, medium low carbonation. No warming, neither astringent nor creamy. Overall impression, 7 out of 10. For a total of 37, which is very good. I like this beer a lot. It's dry, well attenuated, it's flavorful, has caramel, has toffee flavors, without being cloying, which is really good, I think. The bitterness might be slightly high for the style, but I don't know that I would change it, because I think it probably is in the high end of the range, but I suspect it's within the range of the style. I will fess up that you sent us this beer. We thought we might do it in the last show, and I popped it open and poured myself some to judge right before I got the text from Cooper. No, we're not doing it this show. And it was a swing top. So I very sheepishly just closed the bottle again and put it back in my fridge. So it was exposed to atmosphere. You know, I mishandled it with that, and it still came out, I think, really, really nice. I mean, this is the top end of very good, despite the fact that I committed some Dr. Homebrew malpractice with what I did. Exactly. But thank you for sharing.
No worries.
You scored it?
I'm sorry. Total score was 37.
37. All right, Cooper. It's your turn to round out whatever Sharb said. I don't know.
Yeah. The beer came to us in a swing top brown bottle. And appropriate fill and all of that. In the nose, I get a light dark malt impression, a little bit of kind of like a coffee like note to it as well. Hints of toffee and some nuttiness, no hops in the nose, lightly fruity with a dark fruit character. I got a hint of diacetyl as it warmed, and pretty low, smooth alcohol. Nothing standing out too much there. Appearance-wise, it's a reddish brown. Seems quite clear, but it poured with this really crackly head of medium and larger bubbles that just went and just faded real quick to almost to no head. It just, there's pinpoint bubbles, you know, continuing to rise throughout the beer. But it faded almost immediately to no head. So I had to knock a point out for that in the appearance. I try not to, it was a little off-putting there as well. I poured it straight down the glass and thought, you know, waited for that head to form, and it just didn't. It just went, there's things you can do to fix that. Flavor-wise, it is malt forward. To me, the flavor lacked some of the richness that was hinted at in the aroma. It's got a little bit of a kind of a dulled cocoa character, and it dries off the tongue and just seemed a little bit watery to me. There's no real hop here noticeable in the flavor. Very little bitterness from the hops. Most of the bitterness is from the malt in here. I'm drinking this a lot colder, and I'm finding it more enjoyable tonight than it was when I had the sample of it last night. But I'm getting a light diacetyl in the bottle from last night. I'm having a hard time getting at the diacetyl in this in this sample.
Yeah, I don't get any of that.
Probably because it is a bit colder, but I'm finding that there's something in the water in this that's coming across a bit minerally to me, like maybe a little too high on the gypsum, like, you know, minerals. It's like calcium sulfate, kind of high, kind of biting minerality. It's not really sharp or really harsh or anything, but it's noticeable to me, like somebody maybe put a little much on the minerals into the water. You can.
Somebody. I wonder who that was.
Somebody. Yeah. Somebody.
We don't know. We'll never know.
Again, some of these are fine points because it's not like super like biting harsh mineral, like Brian likes to say, like licking a rock. It's got a little coffee like in the aftertaste. It does have some richness to it.
I'm glad to see my licking a rock terminology is coming into vogue here.
Yeah. Honestly, it's, you know, it's been a while since I've had a nut brown ale, and I'm kind of reacclimating to this style. So I like the hoppy stuff. Call me crazy, but I don't seek it out. And maybe I should. I really enjoyed that Samuel Smith's. You know, I'm giving that a new look here. And I'm giving this beer another shake here as well. Last night I had it maybe a little too warm and got some little things in it that bugged me a little bit. But I think to style, it's actually fairly close and doing pretty well. And you can have probably a little bit of minerally water from, you know, if they're pulling it up, like Samuel Smith, for example, from this 260 or however old, you know, 300 year old well, it's, you know, there's probably going to be some minerals in that water. And that British water in general is definitely highly sulfated, and it's going to express a little differently than you do if you just use a neutral water and add just enough calcium to get your mash to work. Mouthfeel wise, it's medium light bodied. It's just a little bit biting. It's not creamy or super smooth. It does have a little noticeable slight alcohol in there, but not very hot, not warm or hot or, you know, burning your throat at all. It's just a little bit, but not too much. Medium low CO2. I guess, you know, after the head fell flat, it does still have CO2 in it because you can still feel a little bit of prickle, a little bit of a bite to it, maybe kind of playing off the minerals that I'm getting in there too. But overall, it's a fairly clean ale, other than the very, very light diacetyl that I got, which again, as Brian mentions, is acceptable in a lot of English characters, in English beers. It's not mentioned specifically in the 2015 guidelines for this style, which is what I was working from. I'd need to check the 2021 and get up to the times. I don't know if it says anything about that. I could check it real quick. The beer may have some other, the thing that was bothering me a little bit is that head, and I'm trying to get at what's causing that. And if it doesn't have, if it has something in it that's a little oily or another attribute that's getting in the way of good head retention. I mean, if you used actual nuts in it or something that had some oils to them or something, that would maybe that'd be a way to try to trick, you know, the beer and cheat your way into a
Cooper,
nutty
you'd be a good conspiracy theorist.
Just grasping at straws.
I don't know. Maybe the fucking earth is flat. I don't fucking know. I don't know. Maybe it is.
Why did the head fall flat?
Too much adrenochrome in here, I think, is what really is happening. And we should just push that as the narrative. It's funny you mentioned that because it almost tastes like, and maybe this is the minerality, it almost tastes overcarbonated, too prickly, too abrasive, so just, in that regard. But like I just poured some and the head lasted 20 seconds.
Yeah, it just fades right away. And it has like the when you pour a soda, that kind of a sound.
Yes. Yeah. And that kind of honestly that it lasts a little bit longer than a soda, but not really. Anyway, did you score it, Coop? And we'll get to Sean and then we can stop guessing at shit.
I landed at it would be a 31 if I had the tail on top of my one. So I landed at a 31 there. Yeah. But it is still in the very good category. Generally within style parameters, which I would say is true. Some minor issues here, but nothing that we can't help you fix. And you know, I think just, you know, maybe a little bit more of the English hop and a little bit more, just a touch more bitterness would add a little counterpoint to the malt that's there. It's a very drinkable beer nonetheless.
Yeah.
Just needs a little more, body to me. It was came across a little watery, and maybe use a diacetyl rest to clean up the diacetyl in there.
All right. Sean.
Yeah.
Are you there? Sir. Are you still alive?
Yes, I am.
You survived the brutal beating given to you by the two doctors homebrew.
What do you think, man? Let's run through your recipe real fast and see if we can't figure out what's making this head drop, and then we'll get your feedback and all that kind of fun stuff.
So It was 10 pounds of mare solder, had 11 ounces of victory malt, 9.5 ounces of cane sugar, 6 ounces of caramel, 4.2 ounces of pale chocolate, and 2.1 ounces of roasted barley. 1.57 ounces of East Kent Goldings, 60 minutes, 0.63 ounces East Kent Goldings at 15 minutes. And it's 1469
nice.
Y yeast for the yeast.
What do you guys think? Sounds okay to me. I mean, did you? Did you treat your water at all? Like Cooper was assaulting you with?
No, I did. Yeah. It was treated for like English ale, just 2.5 grams of Epsom and 2.5 grams of gypsum, 0.4 grams of calcium chloride.
And did you build that up from your home water filtered, or is it from a
reverse osmosis?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So stripped it out and replaced everything. I don't know anything about water chemistry. One thing I've refused to try to learn because I can't. I hated it in high school. I'm not going to do it in my free time. So,
yeah.
What do you guys think? Is that a good?
I can't tell you. I can't do those calculations in my head. If you told me where the mineral levels should have landed at in your water calculator, that would help me. But I would just generally say maybe back off the gypsum and the Epsom salts a little bit on this the next time you make it. For me, that's going to give it a little less of the minerality, which is noticeable to me.
Yeah, it was supposed to be like 52 calcium, 10 magnesium, 6 sodium, 10, 65 SO4, 126 HCO3.
Yeah, that's not crazy. So by the numbers, it sounds reasonably good.
Yeah.
Just enough calcium to get your mash going. A fair amount, you know, moderate sulfate, moderate carbonate. Well, fairly high carbonate, but yeah.
Were you looking at the Sam Smith's website when you decided to add some cane sugar to your your fermentation?
Yeah, you know, actually, this was based off of the Sam Smith's nut brand.
Oh.
I tried to actually sort of imitate something of that nature with that recipe, but I just kind of tweaked it to my own, and obviously I couldn't use the yeast, but 1469 was the closest to that. But I really like 1469. It's one of my favorite yeasts. So
you know, they're not as dissimilar as you would guess by our running through your beer. I mean, the Sam Smith's beer has a little more residual sweetness, but maybe that's a minerality issue really more than anything. But the flavors are 60% sort of there, like the malt flavors and stuff is kind of, it definitely echoes of Sam Smith's for sure.
What was your starting and finishing gravity on this one?
Starting gravity was 10.09.
Okay. That's pretty fine
in there. Yeah.
That's a little bit on the dry side. Yeah. And I was going to say that it's probably dried out a little more than the Sam Smith's.
Mm-hmm.
You might back off the sugar just a little bit and not let it dry out quite as much, I think. But it's, that's a fine point. It shouldn't be a super sweet beer anyway, but I think that a little more sweetness there would let some of the richness just kind of shine and be accented. And if you left the minerality where it was or brought it down a little bit, it would help counteract that a little bit too. I just think that it's the mineral quality is standing out because it's so dry partly.
Yeah, understood. Also, like when I made this, I kegged it and I also put this on nitro. So
cool.
It was a little bit different. It's, a little bit smoother, but obviously for your purposes, I kind of had to carbonated. So
yeah, how was the nitro version? Is that something you would do again? Sounds interesting.
Yeah, actually it actually turned out really good. I liked it.
Okay, because I've probably
more so than this version.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I have a theory where nitrogen beers, they need to be built for the nitrogen, because nitrogen for me it's a creaminess and maybe a little sweet kind of thing, or at least a lack of that CO2 bite
The bite is out of the way.
Yeah, the bite's out of the way. And so there's a perception that it's a little more sweet. And so I really do think that if you're building beers to be on nitrogen, you have to back off a little bit on sweetness, or else it's too much. It's too creamy. It's too whatever.
You can probably get away.
I agree with you.
But I think this would be good on nitrogen because it is sort of, especially with that minerality.
It's drier and it's not super creamy. It could stand to have that mouth-filling quality of the nitrogen. Yeah, I agree.
That sounds good. Hang on real fast, Sean. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to wrap things up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, hang on, everyone. It's Dr. Homebrew.
Dr. Homebrew, please report to the ER for code blue. Dr. Homebrew to the ER, please. No, and your tea time has been moved to 2:30.
Thanks for sticking around, everybody. We're here wrapping up with Sean here. We're sort of getting the fine details of his recipe. We're just talking a little bit about nitrogenating stuff, and, you know, like that. Yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, it's neat. It's an interesting idea. Do you throw things on nitrogen often, or did you know, like, when did you get the idea to put this on nitrogen? Before you brewed it or after you tasted it?
Before I brewed it, I do like nitro quite a bit. I like my stouts. I like porters and things. Like, I just like to throw stuff on nitro, and it's just, for me, it's, I like it. You know, some people aren't really into the nitro thing, but I like a more smooth, creamier beer.
Yeah.
Then maybe some.
Even doing like nitro cold brew coffees now these days. Like, I mean, everything's going on nitro. And if you have the same beer in a brewery, nitro versus non, and you're a home brewer, you might want to, you know, invest in that kind of a setup. I thought it was pretty cool that you did. And you had your nitro set up at NCHF there to pour a beer. And that's, you know, I can count on one hand the number of brewers I know who have a nitro system in their house. That's pretty rad.
Yeah.
This was actually the beer I had at NCHF.
Same beer, yeah.
On the nitro, yes.
Yeah. I think it was popular there too. So yeah, it's we had so many beers on there. I don't know that I got to taste all of them, but yeah, it was fun to have a nitro selection for sure.
Yeah, as your beer warms up, Sean, I'm drinking them side by side with that Sam Smith. They are strikingly appropriately in line. You know, still far enough away for it to be different, obviously, but, you know, and this is a heat damaged and, you know, transit damaged and aged and whatever, but they're, you know, like I said, they're echoes, man. I think you did a pretty good job, you know, corralling the flavors there.
Thanks. Yeah, it was, I just looked at what they put in it and tried to just guess and make it work, you know.
Not easy to do. So you did a good job, Sean.
I'm having a harder time getting at that diacetyl in this sample too. I keep going back to it, and it's like there's really, I don't know. Here's the other thing.
Yeah,
I came home to judge my beers last night for Dr. Homebrew.
Yeah,
and into our home appeared a cinnamon scented broom, like a witch's broom.
Oh from yeah,
Trader Joe's yeah. In the living room with the witch decoration, the witch skeleton that was built out there. And, you know, just different family members have different priorities when it comes to keeping the home aroma free. But, you know, I don't really light candles very often. Incense.
I love, dude, don't get me started on like a bourbon pumpkin candle this time of year. Target has them. Smells like the Haunted Mansion Halloween. That's all I'm saying.
Cool.
Delicious.
Okay.
Shar, what do you think, man? Let's wrap it up here. Let Sean get out of here.
No, I pretty much have nothing to add to what Cooper was just saying.
Okay. You like a candle? Or yeah, the beer?
Okay. Candles with a nice, freshly drawn bath.
Yeah, Dr. Candle.
Candles I can leave. This beer, I think is really well done, and I enjoyed it quite a bit.
All right,
I think side by side with the Sam's, as I'm tasting them more and more, I think I could come up on my score a little bit.
Minerality
and some of that stuff is just a little bit of a fine point.
Yeah,
but the head was just off putting to me, and I think if you, I don't know what your what did you mash at?
While he's looking, what are you going to come up to, Cooper? You're at a 31, if I remember.
31, yeah.
152, 60 okay. minutes.
Okay, that's not too low or too high. That's kind of in the middle. Yeah. But no step mash or anything. I'll come up to a 30.
Just a mash out at 168, but it was a single infusion.
I'll do a 33, JP.
Hey, there you go. And Char, you were what, 37?
Yeah, I was at a 37.
37, right.
So the what you want to have good head retention, in addition to not having anything that's oily at all in the beer to kill the head, is a lot of kind of, you know, medium small chain proteins, just to build that head up and kind of get something that's going to link together in there. And, you know, if your malts that you're using don't have enough available protein in that size range to work, you can do a little bit of a protein rest, you know, let it sit at 120-ish for a little while, you know, 30 minutes or something before you go up to the saccharification rest. It was like 119 to 122 or something in there. I don't know. I don't have it memorized, but look up protein rests. Then you can do that pretty easily by just doing you could do a pretty thick mash and just add part of your water until you get to that temperature, and just add the rest of your water to get up to the saccharification temperature. And maybe it has to be a little thinner mash, have a little extra water on hand to make sure you get to that point that you want to get at. But, or if you have a, you know, Herms or Rim system, you know, you just go for it. But
yeah.
All
right.
That's cool. Something you can do to kind of, if you're.
Yeah. Actually, some of the beers I've made the last few months, I have done like a bunch of different step mashes on them. So
okay,
I have tried, you know, protein rests on a couple of them here and there. So,
and then sometimes, you know, if the malt is just right already coming out, that then do, you know, if you're already doing a protein rest and it's breaking the proteins down too far to tiny, you know, almost just amino acids, then less protein rest is the answer. So it depends on where you're at, where your malt's at, what you're doing. I think most malts that you use these days in general don't really need a protein rest, but because you get a head just fine. But it seems like there was something getting in the way of that. I mean, I guess just make sure that everything that touches the beer doesn't have any kind of oily property to it, or, you know, I don't know, but yeah, it doesn't suck. I was halfway thinking, oh, maybe he's going to tell me he put something really weird in the beer. And I was like, that's why I was like going down these weird conspiracy theory paths. But it's like, I don't know. I'm just guessing here. It's just,
yeah,
I don't. I know, you know how to brew, but there's something weird happening with the head there. So maybe I'll come over and brew with you sometime.
There you go.
We'll check it out.
That's your punishment, Sean.
Oh, darn.
That's your punishment. Shucks. It's the hang of Ryan Cooper. All right, Sean. Well, if that's it, we'll let you go.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you saying that in. Yeah.
And if you guys want to be like Sean, which I recommend you do, email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com and send us a beer that has problems, and Brian Cooper will come over. This president already set, Char is a witness. Brian Cooper will come over and rebrew your problem beer with you for free. You don't have to pay for his airfare or his hotel. Yeah. He'll just crash on your futon. And, you know, feed him, scratch him behind the ears. He'll be good.
If you have a dartboard in your garage, we could use that.
To brew with? Or to sleep on?
Sometimes.
Okay. Yeah. Now, Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com gets you on the waiting list of this very popular, very in-demand podcast series that never ends, which is fine with me. We have to drink a lot of beer. All right, everyone. Thanks a lot for tuning in. I appreciate it. Until next time, we'll see you.
Cheers.